Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great.
Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The newest Marquette Law School poll is set to release this week, but other national polls are already showing a shift in voter allegiances, including some changes in Wisconsin. But what does history tell us about Wisconsin's swing state status and how things might play out in November? We are talking with two experts in this area, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Waukesha campus, Jonathan Kasprick, and the director of the Marquette Law School poll, Charles Franklin. Thank you both for coming in today.
Glad to be here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So I have to start and ask, you've both been studying elections and Wisconsin history for some time. Is this the strangest presidential election that in your recent memory?
I think it has to be. Just when we think things are settling down to be predictable, something unexpected happens.
Would you agree with this?
Yeah, we've gone all year saying this is the rerun of 2020. Nothing's changed, the same script, the same actors, and bang, on July 21st, it all changed.
Just within the last month, really. So, Charles, I'm going to start with you. It's hard to believe that really, it's just like a little over 2 weeks ago that President Biden stepped back. There was also an assassination attempt. What do we know about how Wisconsin voters are feeling about these changes?
Yeah, we've seen a few state polls. As you said, our poll will be out later this week. What they mostly show is, again, a very tight race. Earlier, when Biden was still in the race, we saw Trump opening a 3 or maybe a 4 point lead. That lead has now vanished to back to a toss up, maybe the slightest of Harris leads, but the polls are mixed on that. Probably the biggest thing to recognize is Democrats who were very unenthusiastic when Biden was the candidate have now become almost as enthusiastic as Republicans, erasing an advantage that Republicans have had all year.
Well, as you said, the Marquette Law School poll, the gold standard, of course, is set to be out this week, but other polls are showing what you just said. On Thursday, the conservative market researcher Public Opinion Strategies released poll results for five battleground states, of which Wisconsin was one. It showed Kamala Harris leading Donald Trump in Wisconsin 48-46, averaged across all of the five states, Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. It's a dead heat, as you say. Both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris received 46% of the vote, 4% of voters back third-party candidates, and 4% are undecided. Again, that's just one poll. Is this a big shift since before Biden left the race?
Yes, not a shift from before the debate when it was a very close race. But after the debate and before Biden dropped out, we saw Biden's support drop steadily and rapidly by about 3 or maybe 4 points. We didn't see much change in Trump's standing, so it was all Biden's losses rather than Trump's gains. But in the polling that we've had since Biden dropped out, Harris has pretty much erased all of those losses of Biden in that period to now again be a couple of points ahead in this particular poll, a point or so in others, and a couple of polls where she's down a point or two. But that's very similar to what we were seeing in the spring when it alternated between which candidate was ahead, or twice we had it as a dead tie.
Wisconsin, clearly a very tight race. The pundits are watching our state. Has Wisconsin always been so swingy?
Wisconsin voters love to perplex people like us. We have been, in terms of presidential elections, we have a track record of supporting Democratic candidates, but we also elect Republican governors. When we have a Republican governor, we often have a Democratic legislature. We have produced Bob La Follette Jr. We've produced Joe McCarthy. We've produced Tammy Baldwin, who's one of the most liberal Democrats, and Ron Johnson, one of the most conservative Republicans. So we're confusing, and perhaps confused.
To say the least. How do pollsters define a swing state?
Yeah, you can do it two different ways. Usually we talk about states that are very closely divided. But in Wisconsin, we've had close elections that have generally come down on one side consistently. You know, we had been part of the so-called blue wall of voting Democratic since 1984, I guess, was the last Republican, until 2016 when Trump won. But exactly this point, if you look at the history of divided government in the state for the last 30-plus years, we've almost always had divided government. The 8 years under Scott Walker is the really exceptional period of uninterrupted one-party government. So the other way to think about swing state is one that vacillates voting for one candidate 1 year and the other party the next year. We haven't had quite that reputation. But as you mentioned, Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin, how different could two senators be? Mm-hmm. And yet the state has elected Baldwin twice and Johnson three times.
When did Wisconsin start becoming a state that was watched nationally in terms of presidential elections, would you say?
I think 2016 was the big shocking change. But Wisconsin has been important before that, of course. In the 1990s, it was pretty consistently Democratic. It voted for Bill Clinton twice. The 2000 election is oddly the closest election. I think Al Gore carried the state by about 8,000 votes.
People might forget that.
Yeah, so that was even closer than the 20,000 that Trump carried it in 2016.
So Wisconsinites have also become more polarized, more locked into their party affiliation and their votes. When did that polarization really start in Wisconsin?
I think the polarization really began in the late 1990s. Prior to about 2000, generally the legislature was divided. The assembly tended to be controlled by Republicans in about 6 out of 10 sessions. The Democrats tended to control the Senate, so they kind of had to get along and compromise. Where that changed, I think, really definitively is after the 2010 election. That was the Tea Party election that brought Scott Walker to the governor's office. It brought Republicans control of both houses of the legislature.
And that was a problematic election nationally, too, for Congress.
It was, yes, it was a backlash election against the Obama administration. But the Republicans in the legislature redistricted in a way that really built in an advantage to them.
At the state level.
And so their primary elections tended to be one that tended to polarize the voters. They wanted to capture the nomination in a safe Republican seat. Democrats in the same way, if you're running in Madison in a safe Democratic seat, you're more worried about a primary challenger from the left than you are at the general election.
Do you see this hyperpolarization in the polling then?
We do. And, you know, we agree. Oddly enough, we're looking at the same history. You see it building in the 90s. Excuse me. As state Supreme Court races start to look more and more partisan and just becoming more and more partisan through the current period. But the glimmers of that start in the 90s, pick up in the 2000s, and then really accelerate in the 20-teens. The 2010 election is that tipping point where installed a one-party government that also did substantial gerrymandering in that redistricting. But if you look at the previous period, after the 2004 election, we had Republican control of both houses of the legislature. After 06, the Senate flipped. After 08, the Assembly flipped, and you had one-party Democratic control for 2 years. And then in 2010, it flipped back the other way, unified Republican control, all without any change in the districting. And I think that little stretch is a great example of genuinely competitive legislative elections in a swing state where either party could and did win majorities. But after 2010, that changed. as you say, it was reinforced by the redistricting, though the Republican majority was won fair and square in the 2010 elections. But then the districting helped cement that, and we haven't seen those competitive legislative elections, maybe until this year with
we'll
yet
a new set of
districts.
We'll be talking about our new maps shortly. I want to ask you about the Marquette poll and the questions that you have in there. Ask voters about the issues that are important to them. Have you seen any shift in the polls nationally that you've been looking at in terms of the issues that are important to voters?
Yeah, I think this is one thing where the presidential candidate transition may make some difference, but not as much as other things. So people had been saying the economy was their number one problem. That has continued. It was true before the debate. It was true before Biden dropped out. It's still true after Harris has been the candidate. It seems unlikely to go away as an issue. Immigration has been the second highest issue, but has actually been declining in importance slowly, but still in second place. The one place that I think could change is Harris may be a more aggressive candidate on the abortion issue.
We have a woman at the top of the ticket now.
Absolutely. Democrats rank abortion number one as their most important issue, but independents rank it quite a ways down. And so I think it's possible that she may emphasize that issue more than Biden was doing. Whether that brings any independents over is an open question. It'll certainly appeal to the Democratic base. But I think this year, base alone is not likely enough to win. Our parties are very evenly balanced, about 30% Republican, 29% Democratic here in the state. So you got to have some appeal to independents. And those have been pretty evenly split, leaning a little bit towards Trump lately. But again, we'll see in the next poll if that's still the case. But Harris still needs to bring some of them over, just as Trump needs to bring them over. And right at the moment, his campaign doesn't seem to be pitched to those independent voters at this point.
You know, in Wisconsin, I know that agricultural issues for a very long time were very important to voters, but there's been a change in Wisconsin historically. What's important to rural voters? There are a lot of rural voters in Wisconsin.
Rural voters. And up until maybe about 2000, both Democrats and Republicans campaigned in rural areas, and the Democrats were particularly effective at campaigning on agricultural policy. I think it started with Bill Proxmire, actually, in the 1950s. Russ Feingold made a point of going to every county every year to talk to people in those areas. But as the number of family farms has declined precipitously, I think the majority of people living in rural areas aren't engaged in agriculture. And so in that case, as the number of farm families has declined, Republicans have been much more successful in campaigning on cultural issues, things like being pro-life or family values or things like that. That seems to have changed the outlook, in particular in northern Wisconsin. Used to be that Wausau and that central Wisconsin area was pretty reliably Democrat. Northwestern Wisconsin from Superior across the lake was pretty reliably Democrat, and we can't say that anymore.
In a state where every vote matters, what is the key to Democrats maybe shifting the way they talk to rural voters? Do we know?
I think they're going to have to campaign on the issues that you raise, the economy. If they can make a pitch that we can improve the economy, and if they remind voters perhaps what the economy looked like under COVID and under the end of the Trump administration, I think that might appeal to some. I think the abortion rights issue is quite powerful, particularly among people who didn't ever expect Roe v. Wade to be overturned.
Approval ratings are something that pollsters often look at that I know you ask about. In previous polling, Vice President Harris' approval ratings have been quite low, even lower than President Biden's, which were historically low. Will that hurt her?
I think it's a second look now that we're going to see if people shift their views. You know, Harris's favorability rating has consistently been in the mid-30s to 36 or 38%. Biden's have been in the high 30s to the very low 40s. That's completely normal. Vice presidents almost always poll a little lower than the president they serve under. And that's true for Democratic and Republican presidents going back to the
70s. So in some ways, it doesn't really mean anything now?
It means that the vice presidents are always in the shadow of the president and are burdened or lifted up by that president's performance. We have seen polls since Biden dropped out that show Harris gaining from as little as just 2 or 3 points in favorability to as much as 11 points in favorability. So I don't think we're yet settled on how much she may move up. But certainly the average has been a significant shift in her direction. The other thing with vice presidents is between 10 and 15% have consistently said they don't know enough about her to have an opinion when she was vice president before Biden dropped out. Now we're seeing that number drop to the mid-single digits, 5 or 6 or 7% who don't know.
There's more news coverage.
And that'll just build through the Democratic convention as she becomes virtually as well known as Donald Trump or Joe Biden.
A big bump in her approval rating in the Marquette poll this week?
Well, we'll see. We'll see how much it moves, because getting to know you can be good, but getting to know you can be bad. Both sides are competing to paint a picture of her, a very negative Republican picture, a very positive Democratic picture. I think we know from all the other polls that have already been completed is her favorables are up, but her net favorability still seems to be more negative than positive. On the other hand, virtually every political figure right now is more negative than positive. That's true of Donald Trump. It's true of Joe Biden. It's true of her. But she seems at the moment poised to be less unfavorably viewed than some of the others, certainly less than Biden
making
was.
Making some ground.
Yes,
sure.
Making up ground.
We know that Vice President Harris, even right now, could be announcing her running mate. And maybe by the time this show airs, we might know. But do we know what type of vice presidential candidate might appeal to Wisconsin voters? Does history tell us anything? Who do we like?
I think in this case, the vice president nominee will have to be someone who's going to appeal to those independent voters. So I don't think she's going to pick someone who's going to enthusiastically rile up the base. She's going to pick someone who's going to be seen as more moderate. I think the governor of Pennsylvania is sort of leading in that sense, that he comes from a key swing state. He is regarded as a moderate. Mark Kelly from Arizona is kind of an exciting option. I don't think we've ever had an astronaut candidate before, but that's hard to it's hard to dislike an astronaut. Tim Walz has been getting a lot of really good buzz, too.
Good Midwestern background.
Again, appealing to that Midwestern sort of stoic male kind of hardworking dad-type figure that might work really well with Kamala Harris.
Do vice presidential candidates matter?
Generally not. I think the best statistical analysis going back 30, 40, 50 years shows that the vice president may gain you between 1.5 and 2 percentage points in their home state, but not much else.
Which couldn't matter if it's a swing state.
And exactly. That's probably the strongest argument for Shapiro from Pennsylvania right now, is if history says a couple of points, and he's got a 61% job approval rating in Pennsylvania. That's why I think a lot of people are betting on him. On the other hand, in this year, when so many of us have been wrong in believing we know what's about to happen, I don't think we want to put big money on that.
Well, you're going to make
yet.
Predictions at the end of the show, just so you know.
Oh, great.
who are the voter groups that have mattered in Wisconsin historically? Are there certain groups that are almost always targeted in Wisconsin?
Well, there are certainly regions that have always been targeted. So the Democratic strategy really in the last several cycles has been to emphasize big turnout in Madison and Milwaukee. Dane County and Milwaukee County are the big prizes. If turnout is great in those areas, that will carry the state.
What about for Republicans?
For Republicans, traditionally, they have done very well in rural areas, but of course, there are not a lot of votes in rural areas. So the suburbs have become a lot more interesting, especially the so-called wow suburbs of Washington, Ozaukee, and Waukesha. Those were for decades Republican strongholds, but they've become less so. Republicans still carry them significantly, But again, in a close election where every vote matters, if they can bring Waukesha's Republican total down from 65 to 60%, that might be really helpful.
There's been a lot of reporting about the black vote. I know that President Biden had been slipping with that group of voters prior to his stepping away. Vice President Harris has been trying to court those voters. Of course, we saw reporting about President Trump having some difficulty in messaging to black voters last week. What do we know about any shift with the black vote?
It seems to be coming back towards Harris, though Trump is still taking between 15 and 20%, which is pretty good for a Republican in a presidential year with black voters. Still early. I'd still like to see a lot more polling on the national level. That's what I was talking about, national polling. In Wisconsin, black voters are only about 4 or 5% of registered voters. So they're a very important group for Democrats to maximize turnout for and to do very, very well with. But it's a small group of voters. And as a result, polling is really weak in telling us what that group thinks, because no poll, mine or anyone else's, has more than a very small sample. So what we normally do is aggregate several months' worth of polling to have enough black respondents to say something responsibly about what they're thinking.
Which will be difficult this year.
You got it, because of the change of candidate. So I don't think we'll make much of anything out of a single poll. By the mid-fall, we will have a good idea of how much black voters have come back to Harris and how Hispanic voters are shifting as well, because that's a group that Biden had been struggling with as well.
We've talked a little bit about this group of independent voters that seems so important to both camps. Is there a way to, can we say now who has the advantage with that small group of people?
Over the course of the spring, we've seen a shift. They were leaning a little bit towards Biden in the winter, and in the late spring started leaning towards Trump by a little bit, and that was true in June, our last poll. So we'll see where they are with this next poll. They're a competitive group, and they are swing voters in the sense that they can shift towards one party or the other from poll to poll. It's partly because of small sample size. You can't really know a lot about them, but it's also because they're genuinely independent, and they tend to be less viscerally involved in politics. So they're not watching every minute of every newscast. They're paying episodic attention, and it matters what the news of the day is that they hear about that can swing their opinion. So I think there's a big battle there. Independents maybe make up about 8% of likely voters in the state.
Is that the biggest small group that people are fighting for?
Yeah, it is, probably. We leave out the moderates, and we probably should spend a little more time thinking about moderate voters who don't think of themselves as liberal or conservative. Even though they're moderate, they've tended to vote Democratic in recent years. But that's another group which isn't an automatic win for Democrats, and goes back to this question of could a vice presidential nominee appeal to those more moderate, possibly rural, white voters in the state in particular.
Do we know historically who those independent voters, what they've looked like in the past in Wisconsin?
They are independent in the sense that they don't like to be told what to do. I mean, I think they tend to be the kind of people who are attracted to the so-called maverick politician. So these were the people who voted for Bill Proxmire for years and years and years. They liked the fact that he was independent, and they admired that quality of him. Feingold could do that as well. Lee Sherman Dreyfus was another good example on the Republican side of someone who could be really attractive to independent-minded people who didn't necessarily agree with everything that the Democrats wanted or everything that the Republicans wanted, and they wanted someone to kind of pick and choose.
The second gentleman was in Wausau last week talking to, focusing on Hmong voters. These smaller groups of Wisconsin voters, this is a sign of how tight the race is?
It is, and it's, I think, in some sense, an unending quest to find the critical swing group. And my view is there are no single critical swing groups when you're deciding elections by 20,000 votes. You know, you and 21,000 of your friends can become a significant swing vote here. It's important to recognize the value of every element of your coalition and pay attention to that those elements and do what you can to win them, and for the other side to do what they can to entice them away from you. But if you want big groups that matter, I would say women and men, because there's basically 50% of each of those groups. Those are big groups, and we've seen an increasing gender gap between the two in their vote choices and in their partisan leanings and in some of the issues that they consider important. So I think it's wrong to think of either men or women as a homogeneous group. There's a lot of
issues matter.
Lot of different things that make up the views of women and the views of men. But the growing political gap between the two, I think, is something that sometimes we don't pay as much attention to as we do a group that's 4% or 6% or 8%.
I'm assuming this election will tell us a lot about after the November date. I want to ask you quickly about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We learned last week he's likely to be on the Wisconsin ballot. Who does he hurt or help? What do we know?
Independents is the group that certainly is the most attracted to him. That's partly because they're independent. It's partly because, exactly as you said, they are not tied to a party. They're pretty disgruntled with the existing parties, and so they're attracted there.
Is he pulling votes away from either Harris or Trump?
And, the sort of balance between Biden and Trump and Harris and Trump, we'll see. But I don't see there's much reason for that to shift. What has been true of Kennedy is he's drawn more from Republicans than he has from Democrats. And so he's actually, on balance, hurt Trump just a little bit more than he's hurt Biden, but he's really attracted those independents. Now, his support has dropped from 16% to 13% to 8% in our June poll. We'll see what it looks like in July. But this is the normal pattern for an independent or third-party candidate, is their support tends to ebb as folks focus on the two major party candidates. I think now that the Republican convention is done, soon we'll get through the Democratic convention, we'll really see if there's staying power for these third-party candidates.
John, I want to ask you about the two things that will be on the August 13th ballot. A lot of primary challenges in our state legislature. We've talked about how there's new maps. What does history tell us about how those primary challenges might fare out? Do we know more left, more right, incumbent?
Well, the big thing about the new maps is that we have legislative districts that generally are much more competitive than they have been for the last several elections. So I think what we can expect is a legislature to emerge next January that is more closely divided than it has been in a long time. I think also this will have a moderating impact, because if as a candidate, you're the biggest threat to your continued place in office is a primary challenger, that's going to tend to polarize politics significantly. And if you sort of recognize that you're going to have to attract those independent voters, those moderate voters, people who maybe vote Democratic to vote for you, you're going to be much more moderate and willing to compromise.
What about there's two constitutional amendment questions on that primary ballot. We've seen a lot of constitutional amendment questions in the recent elections. Does history tell us anything about how Wisconsinites perceive those type of questions?
I think generally history tells us that they're confused by these sorts of questions. In this case, these two constitutional amendments would limit the governor's ability to spend money given to the state by the federal government. So instead of the governor simply spending money that was allocated for a specific purpose, an emergency purpose perhaps, the legislature would have to approve it. So I think this is an effort really by a Republican legislature to sort of rein in what they see as too powerful spending authority by the Democratic governor.
Do voters see that intent then?
I think they're going to start to see it as this election has a lot of organizations opposed or supportive of these amendments. So I think in the next few weeks we're going to see a lot of advertising that will really start to educate voters one way or the other.
Well, I warned you both we were going to end the show with predictions, so I'm going to give you both some time to make a prediction that you're confident in. We'll start with you, Charles.
Give me a quarter and I'll flip it and tell you who wins. And I'm very confident that is as unconfident as I am about the winners. I think a little more helpful possibly is we've seen a set of issues that are sort of baked in, the economy, immigration, abortion. Well, I think the emphasis could change. I don't think opinion is likely to shift dramatically on those. So how Harris runs on those issues may be different than how Biden was running. How Trump runs on those had been clear, but in the last week or two, he's become more aggressive in his attacks on Harris as a person and paying less attention to the issues that he'd emphasized in his rallies all year long. So it's a little unclear how he's shifting on that.
Mm-hmm. What's your prediction?
Well, I'll go out on a limb and say it'll be very close. I think what
history tells you this.
This election is starting to remind me a lot of 2008. And I think the enthusiasm level that we're going to see is really going to harken back to that sense of history being made by electing the first African-American president, electing the first female president. I think is going to generate a lot of enthusiasm on the Democratic side.
All right. We will wait to see. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Glad to do it.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.